Should be up and running. I'll encourage you to all place yourselves on mute, unless if you'd like to ask a question, and feel free to ask questions. And a welcome back, warm welcome back, Baruch Haba, virtually to our rabbinic intern, Ezra Cohn, all the way from New Rochelle, this small suburb outside of New York City, where I think I got my start in the rabbinate in a small synagogue in New Rochelle, doing some teaching there. So, Rav Ezra, it's great to have you back. Really, we've enjoyed learning with you throughout the year, and I still hope we can welcome you back in person at some point to learn from you up close and in person. But until then, it's a pleasure to learn from you. And tonight's shiur is really fascinating. So I'm gonna be quiet, put myself on mute, and allow you to introduce your topic. Thanks again for being here.
Awesome. So first of all, can people hear? Can folks see me and hear me okay? Thumbs up. Awesome. Okay, great. So it's so nice to see some old faces and some new faces too. I'm really looking forward to doing this two-part series together. I'm going to share my screen so that we can all look at the sources, and then I'll just give a brief introduction to what I'm hoping to accomplish tonight. Let me see if I can. So, can everybody see my screen? You see the sources here? Can you still see the sources? You can also. Okay, great. So here's the thing: when I share my screen, I have a little bit of a view of who's in the Zoom room, but I can't see everyone. So that means if you raise your hand or whatever, I'm not gonna be able to see. So please just unmute yourselves and interrupt if you have a question or a comment that you want to share. Okay, cool. So welcome everyone. I'm really excited to learn together. Before we start, I just wanted to take a minute or two to sort of outline the content and the purpose of the short series and some other important details. So, mental health is something that's always been important to me, both in terms of personal experiences and in terms of my own spiritual and academic interests. When I was in college, I wrote my undergraduate thesis on the halachic challenges that individuals who experience and struggle with depression face in different areas of life, whether that means exercising on Shabbat, or things that are more consequential than that, and how poskim, decisors of Jewish law, address those challenges. And so I'm really excited to be here, sort of continuing that and doing the Shir series. And there's a lot of Torah that intersects with mental health. And we as a community and society are really only beginning to uncover the extent of that. So this is going to be a two-part series of shiurim specifically about the psychology of Birkat HaGomel. In fact, that's the title. So for those that are unfamiliar, Birkat HaGomel, which is in English, I guess, roughly translated as the Thanksgiving blessing, is a bracha that one recites after surviving a dangerous or harrowing circumstance to give thanks to God for the favorable outcome. It's usually said in shul during Torah reading. And so in this Shir series, we're going to explore Birkat HaGomel's applicability to mental illness and also reimagine the prayer as being deeply psychologically relevant. And we're going to split that up into two different talks. And so I guess the first episode is about Birkat HaGomel and mental illness. And the central question that I want to ask and answer broadly tonight is, may Birkat HaGomel be recited upon recovery from mental illness? And that's a halachic discussion that I want to have tonight. So before we do that, I just want to establish, I guess, just some things to note, some expectations. Tonight specifically, as opposed to next week, is going to be a little bit lighter topic-wise. But tonight we're going to be dealing with, a topic that can be highly personal. At least statistically speaking, a number of people in the world and in this year have experienced a mental health challenge in a significant way at some point in their lives or will. And if it feels intense at any point and need to excuse yourself, please feel free to do that. And the second is sort of related. For some of us, the shiur might be practical and even consequential, and some of us, might want to follow it and maybe personalize it even. And I want to acknowledge that and also invite people not to personalize for several reasons. The first is because every case is unique and deserves its own attention. And the second is because I'm a rabbinic intern, which means that I've prepared for this and I like to think I have something to contribute, but by no means am I a licensed mental health professional. And what I say is certainly not the final word. So please, you know, no need to hang on to every word so consequentially. We do have a lot to discuss tonight, and I'm going to try and keep the time, but if you need to hop out, you know, feel free to slip out quietly. So let's get started. So Birkat HaGomel, the Thanksgiving blessing, as we sort of described, recited upon the recovery from dangerous, life-threatening circumstances. And so I guess what I want to start by asking is, what kinds of questions do we need to ask ourselves? This is a question for whoever wants. What kinds of questions do we need to ask ourselves in order to point us in the direction of an answer? So in attempting to figure out, may Birkat HaGomel be recited when it comes to cases of mental health and mental illness, what kinds of questions do we need to ask ourselves in order to point us towards an answer? Anybody have any thoughts on that? No, that's okay too. No thoughts. Okay. So if something comes up, then just unmute yourselves and shout it out. So let's just start, I guess, by then introducing Birkat HaGomel as a topic. So Birkat HaGomel, the source for Birkat HaGomel is the Gemara, the Talmud in Masechet Brachot. I'm just curious, when I do that, can you see the blue also when I'm... Oh, okay, cool. So that's going to make things easier to follow. So the first source is the Gemara in Brachot, in Masechet Brachot, and Daf Nun Dalet Amubed, and Daf 54. And the Torah says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Arba'at Tzrichin Lehodot, that there are four individuals that need to give thanks, that are required to give thanks. Yordei Hayam, people who arrive after a dangerous sea journey, people who travel the desert, people, Misha Hayachole un Vinitrape, somebody who is sick and then recovered, Misha Hayachavush Beveta Asrim Vyatza, and somebody who was imprisoned and merited to be freed from prison. And the Gemara and the rest of the block text here sort of goes into a very lengthy exegesis where they derive all of these from the same set of verses in one of the chapters in Tehillim and Psalms. Kapitel Kuf Zayin, chapter 107, and the Gemara basically shows where they derive these four specific seafarers, people who survive desert trips, people who are sick and recover, and people who are freed from prison. Why those four specifically are used as the examples, but in any case, that's really the origin of the blessing in the Gemara, and that is codified in Rabbi Yosef Cairo's formative Shulchan Aruch and Orach Chaim, basically verbatim, Arba Tzrichim Lehodot, four were required to give thanks, the same four, Yordei Hayam, Hoche Midbarot, Misha Hayachole Venitrape, Misha Hayachavush Beveta Asurim Viatza, all those four, someone who is sick, someone who crossed the desert, someone who came from a sea journey, and somebody who was freed from prison. And that is what the Shulchan Aruch writes. And just for context, this is what the bracha itself, the text of the bracha actually looks like in the Siddur. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam HaGomel L'Chayivim Tovot Shegemalani Kol Tov. This is the specific text as it's currently printed in standard Ashkenazic Siddurim. Sfardim have, I believe, a slightly different version of the text. And it's a little bit of a longer story how we got from how the text of Birkat HaGomel has changed over the years, because it has, but we don't really, that's not really our objective today, and that's just a sample about Birkat HaGomel. It's usually recited during Torah reading in shul, so that's just a brief general introduction to Birkat HaGomel as a concept. Does anybody have any questions on that? No? Thumbs up for ready to move on.
What's the benefit of saying it at shul during Torah reading?
Great question. So the Gemara says that it should be recited in the presence of 10. The Gemara does not specify whether that means 10 men or 10 women or the Gemara, there's a little bit of a discussion that at least some of those should be scholars, should be Talmidei Chachamim. The consensus is that that's not ma'akev, that's not an essential condition. And so it usually ends up working out. My understanding is that one is required to have at least 10 men present for the reading of the Torah. And so, you know, if you go to Torah reading, you're going to meet that requirement no matter what. And I think that's how it became associated with Torah reading. There could be more to it, and it doesn't have to be required read during Torah reading either.
So, Ezra, this is Deborah Sosby. I'm going back to your earlier question. Sure. It seems to me that the four conditions that you spoke of all have a specific and pretty much definable end, although you could argue on the sickness. And so I'm thinking that the mental health issue is harder because that's what you're going to get into, because to define, yes, the mental health problem is behind somebody. One could argue that mental health issues are sort of ongoing or come and go, things like that.
Sure. Great. So that's a great point. So essentially, Deborah, what you're saying is, you know, it's hard to know when you've really extricated yourself from a mental illness, or sometimes it can be. And so when there's a specific end date that's tacked on to these requirements, it's a lot easier to figure out at what point Birkat HaGomel is said. But if it's, you know, sort of amorphous, then it can be hard to know at what point you're considered healed for the purposes of reciting this bracha. Am I getting that right? Okay.
Yes, you got it right. Sorry, I couldn't find my unmute. Yes.
No worries. Okay, great. So exactly. So I guess essentially what the question is how healed is considered healed? You know, what is getting, it says in the Gemara, Misha Hayachola Venitra Pei in source number one in the blue that I just underlined, you know, you have to get better, Venitra Pei, but how better is considered better, and what does better look like? So that's something that we're going to talk about. Yeah, great point. So let's move on. So that's just the general introduction to Birkat HaGomel. And it sort of answers, you know, at least the most basic question, which is that we know that individuals who are sick are obligated to recite Birkat HaGomel. So I guess the next immediate question before we get to Deborah's question, which we're going to get to, of how much better is better, the question we should ask first is what's considered sick? We know that someone who's sick recites Birkat HaGomel, so what's considered sick? So it's very clear that contemporarily speaking, you know, mental illness is viewed as a genuine medical condition akin to a physical illness. I don't think I need to talk at length about that point, but just briefly, here are some, I have some excerpts from contemporary poskim who, you know, deal a lot with medical ethics, Shilas, about the equivalence between medical illness and mental illness. But I just wanted to start by this quote from an author named Caroline Kettlewell, who wrote a memoir called Skin Game about self-injurious behavior. And she sort of poetically makes the point that, you know, just as a heart could fail in its pumping, a lung in its breathing, then why not a brain in its thinking, rendering the world forever askew? In the sense, what it seems like to me, like she's saying, is, you know, just as all these other organs in the body, you know, sometimes something happens that makes them function differently. A brain works the same way. And in a sense, it's essentially on a biological level, it's no different than any other, it's not different than any sort of medical issue, at all. That's I thought was, you know, sort of like a poetic, interesting way of saying that, you know, mental illness is, you know, a genuine medical, there are biological bases for this. It's not, you know, some sort of like obscure, you know, condition, whatever it is that maybe it was once thought to be. But in any case, here I have three or four specific excerpts from contemporary, you know, decisors, contemporary poskim, who specifically deal with medical ethics in a really robust way. And here's what they say. So the first is from the Nishmat Avraham. The Nishmat Avraham is a vast compendium. It's a ton of volumes of medical halachic, Jewish medical ethics. It was written by Rabbi Avraham Sofer Avraham. Yes, he has two of his three names are the same. He was born in 1935. I believe he's still alive. And he says, "Mibichinat chilul Shabbat, when it comes to the desecration of Shabbat, Ein kol hevdel bein chola mimachla gufani michola imachla nefashit. There's no difference between somebody who suffers from a physical illness and somebody who struggles with a mental illness. And all the klalim, all the general principles that we apply to somebody who struggles with a mental illness when it comes to, you know, when they can violate this or that halacha to facilitate their well-being, we apply that also to somebody who struggles with a mental condition as well. And the Sitz Eliezer by Eliezer Waldenberg, who he was born in 1915. He died in 2006. He was the chief posik, the chief rabbi of the Sha'arei Tzedek Medical Center in Yerushalayim. So he dealt with a lot of medical ethics questions. And he says, "Misha chala b'chole nefesh, shagam zeh b'geder chole shenit rape, he nechona me'od." That this is also considered a genuine, bona fide sickness that one heals from, and that characterization is actually accurate. And so, you know, just a little bit of an insight into the way poskim generally conceptualize mental illness. They do conceptualize it as a genuine medical condition, something to be taken seriously like a genuine medical condition. And that's that. Okay, so sort of we asked the first question, what is Birkat HaGomel? And we know now that Birkat HaGomel is recited upon recovery from sickness. And we know that mental illness is considered a genuine illness in a lot of important ways, certainly in the eyes of halacha. So the next question that I think is, okay, so how sick is considered sick? How sick does one have to be? What does that look like? If somebody is struggling with a, with some sort of, or experiencing some sort of mental struggle, how bad or how intense does that have to be in order for recovery from that to warrant the recitation of Birkat HaGomel? Does that make sense as a question? Thumbs up. Okay, awesome. So that's what I want to get to now. The truth is that the Shulchan Aruch says, "Bechol choli tzarich levareich." Bechol choli tzarich levareich. Any recovery from any illness warrants the recitation of Birkat HaGomel, afilu eino choli shel sakana, even if one is not dangerously ill, the Shulchan Aruch says, even if one is not dangerously ill, v'lo maka shel chalal, they're not suffering from any sort of internal injury, ela kol she'al lemita v'yarad. The barometer here, according to the Shulchan Aruch, is whether the illness is intense enough that it causes one to become bedridden. If it causes you to have to hop into bed, then that would be enough to recite Birkat HaGomel. And that's according to Rabbi Yosef Cairo, and that's, you know, how Sfardim would paskin based on this, according to this concept. And the Ramak points out in his commentary, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, you know, the primary decisor for Ashkenazic Jewry, he says, not really so much. He says, "V'yesh omrim." There are some who say, "De'enu mavarek rak al choli she'yesh bo sakana." Some say that bedridden is not intense enough. That's not enough. That's not sick enough for the purposes of this halacha. And one actually has to be dangerously ill. They have to be so sick that it threatens their life. And that is the Ramaz, and therefore the Ashkenazic definition, according to the Rama, of how sick someone has to be to recite Birkat HaGomel. Now, the truth is, this machloket, this argument, this dispute between the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama is actually a machloket in the Rishonim, in the earlier religious decisors, about how to understand the nature of Birkat HaGomel. Meiri, who was, he lived in, I believe, the Spanish Catalan, and he died in 1306, and the Meiri writes that, you know, you say Birkat HaGomel on anything that is life-threatening. And that's how the Rama paskins, and the Ravid says that as well. There are multiple Ravids. It's not the most famous Ravid, if that means anything. It's the second most famous Ravid. Rambam actually disagrees, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins in accordance with the Rambam, that one recites Birkat HaGomel as long as they were sick enough to be in bed. Now, if I were to ask you, according to the Shulchan Aruch, according to you just read the Shulchan Aruch, we read it together. Kol choli tzrich levarich. Any sick individual, afilu eino choli shel sakara velo maka shel chalal, even if it's not dangerous, even if it's not an internal injury, which was considered very serious and still is considered very serious, kol she'al lemita v'yared recites Birkat HaGomel. Anybody who was bedridden recites Birkat HaGomel. So on the basis of the Shulchan Aruch, if I was to ask, here's a question. Let's say, having just read the Shulchan Aruch, let's say that someone has an illness that is life-threatening, but does not cause them to be bedridden. Let's say they had some sort of eye ailment, some sort of eye sickness, and an eye infection that, you know, doesn't cause you to be bedridden, but it's still life-threatening. According to the Shulchan Aruch, would you say that that person should recite Birkat HaGomel? I'm curious. That's just a question. I'm curious to hear what people think. Essentially, the question is bedriddenness a simen or a siba? Do you have to be bedridden in order to recite the bracha? Or is bedriddenness really just the floor? And if it's life-threatening, even if it doesn't make you bedridden, does one recite Birkat HaGomel on that? Any thoughts? Allison, you're nodding.
It seems to me, because at least in the English translation here, it's saying recovering from any illness warrants it. And then even if it's not life-threatening and only, and I'm putting that in quotes, that you're bedridden, but it's not saying that you have to be bedridden in order to warrant saying it.
Great. I think that that's pshat. I think that's what I thought when I read it also. So I was actually very surprised to read in source number 9 that a certain rabbi, Rabbi Avraham ben Shmuel Miyuchas is his name. He died in 1767. And he was the Miyuchas as a last name, was the last name of a very prominent Sephardic rabbinic and merchant family. Rabbi Avraham Miyuchas in his Shut Sadeh Haaretz, he says actually something very interesting. Let's see what he says. He says, "Ein lanu ela divrei Maran v'kavate nahagu kol ha'olam." We have the words of Maran, our master. He's referring to Rabbi Yosef Cairo, by which all of Sephardic Jewry rules in accordance with. And he says, "Nahagu kol ha'olam," the whole world's custom, "shelo mevarich al chole einayim," that one does not make a Birkat HaGomel on an eye ailment. Afki hu vaday chole misukan, even though it's life-threatening, kevan shelo ala lemita eino mevarich, because an individual, even if they have a life-threatening eye ailment, an eye ailment is not the kind of thing that requires someone to spend time in bed. And therefore, if somebody has a life-threatening condition that doesn't require them to be bedridden, according to Rabbi Miyuchas, they actually would not recite Birkat HaGomel. And so according to that, bedriddenness, if that's a word, is an essential condition in Birkat HaGomel. It's not just the floor. It's not bedridden or anything worse than that. It's specifically bedriddenness. And I was really surprised to read that because, like Allison, I read the Shulchan Aruch as saying that, you know, bedriddenness or worse. Or worse, it has to be at least bedridden. But if it's, you know, presumably if you're dangerously ill, that's good enough whether you're bedridden or not. But according to the Sadeh Haaretz, he says no. You actually specifically have to be bedridden. And if you're more sick but not bedridden, then you wouldn't recite HaGomel. And if you're less sick, then you certainly wouldn't recite Birkat HaGomel. So whether we agree with it or not, does that make sense? The Shut Sadeh Haaretz is chiluk there. Yeah. Okay, so I was, after reading this, therefore, very validated to read that a lot of people disagree with the Sadeh Haaretz on this one, notably Rabbi Ovadia Yosef in source number 10. And Rabbi Ovadia Yosef was the chief Sephardic rabbi of Israel in the 80s, I believe, and he was very famous for his erudition and expertise in all areas of Jewish law, specifically though in remembering just like everything that he read. There's supposedly a story about Rav Avadji Yosef where he quoted a sefer in a responsa that he wrote, and a certain individual was reading his responsum and came across this citation, and he said, "I've never heard of the sefer before, and I'm going to take Rav Avadya to task on this one, and I'm going to go see if I could find the Sefer and look for the citation and see if Rav Avadya was actually quoting from somewhere real. And this guy went all over the country looking for this specific Sefer that Rav Avadya Yosef quoted. And he spent years on this and he couldn't find the Sefer. And he went to visit Rav Avadya Yosef. He said to Rav Avadya, he's like, I know that this citation, I know that this is fake. I know that you didn't actually pull this from memory because I've looked everywhere and in all the Beit Midrash and Eretz Yisrael, there's not a single Sefer. And Rav Avadya said, yeah, it's true. He's like, I was so surprised. He's like, I was actually touring America in Brooklyn. I happened to be in a Beit Midrash and I was waiting to daven mincha and I pulled the Sefer off the shelf I had never seen before. And this was the page that I opened to, and I got to learn for a few minutes before mincha. The point was that he really did have an incredible memory. And Rav Avadya Yosef writes, getting back on topic, that he says, that somebody who really examines the issue properly will realize that the Shulchan Aruch didn't come to exclude anything by quoting bedriddenness as a quality for reciting, as a qualification for reciting Birkat HaGomel. Ela lehosif, he just meant it as a floor. Meaning that even somebody who is not dangerously ill must recite Birkat HaGomel as long as they were bedridden. But not that they only recite Birkat HaGomel if they were bedridden. And he says, if they were, one was dangerously ill, even if they did not require bed rest, they must recite Birkat HaGomel. The same eye ailment that the Sedei Haaretz said does not recite Birkat HaGomel, Rav Avadya says, absolutely recites Birkat HaGomel. Shenechshav sheyesh bo sakana le'inyan chalel av Shabbat, and one would be obligated to violate Shabbat for that individual because their life is in danger. And therefore, even if somebody does not end up being bedridden as a result of their illness, but they're still dangerously ill, they must recite Birkat HaGomel when they are healed. Now, the question is, first of all, Does people following? Is that Rav Avadya? Yeah.
Because the way we respond to care has totally changed since the 1930s going forward to all the way back in history. Because now, it used to be that many illnesses, people went to bed because rest was one of the very few ways of trying to heal the body. But now there's a whole different level because of antibiotics. So how do the rabbis handle the fact that really healthcare is totally different?
Great. So if I understand correctly, just correct me if I'm wrong, you're asking, care has changed so much over the decades, centuries even,
only in the last 100 years since antibiotics came to the fore.
Last 100 years, once upon a time, you know, bed rest was actually considered an appropriate form of care for even the most sick individuals. Nowadays, you know, you can get off with an antibiotic. So how do rabbis account for that?
Right. It used to be so many more illnesses were life-threatening because mm-hmm. there was no way. They just had to wait and see whether you lived or died. But now we don't have to wait that way, in that same fashion.
Yeah. It's a good question. I think that the definition of the parameters of dangerously ill change with the times. And, you know, if somebody, just because somebody was dangerously ill, in the 1930s, and they're not dangerously ill now, doesn't mean we treat them as if they were dangerously ill in the 1930s when we're treating them now. I think we adapt our,
But Yeah. How would, but it seems like there were lots of situations where you might say this prayer in the past, where now it's, so for instance, the flu, maybe once upon a time was quite often life-threatening, but now it's less so, or measles, or any number of things.
Yeah. So it's a good question. And it actually, you know, it relates, I think, more directly, it relates here too, but I think there's a really important corollary of this really, in the discussion that somebody who crosses the sea is required to recite Birkat HaGoma, because, you know, that was something that was dangerous once upon a time, but now people travel by sea all the time, you know, on cruise ships and things like that, and it's not particularly dangerous. So yeah, it's a really good point. Let's circle back to that at the end, because I want to make sure I get through all this before it's too late. And then when we have time at the end for questions, we can circle back to it. Okay, great. So,
sorry, can I just add one quick thing, which is maybe sure. While have better, you know, medication and such to treat physical ailments, that we're actually suffering more from mental illness today, and there are more and more people bedridden for that. So yeah. Just to tie it back to it, what you're speaking
could
to.
Could be. So, okay. So just to recap, you know, we know that Birkat HaGoma is a thing. We know that it's recited upon recovery from illness. We know that mental illness is considered a genuine medical condition. And we know that, and we have a little bit of an idea now as to the parameters of how sick one has to be. You know, according to the Rama, an Ashkenazic custom, one has to be dangerously ill. According to the Shulchan Aruch and Sephardic custom, one has to be bedridden. And there's a machloket whether to understand bedridden as specifically and only bedridden or worse. Depending on that, you know, we sort of start to see how this might impact our question of mental illness. So for example, somebody who struggles or experiences an eating disorder, that is not typically the kind of thing that requires one to be bedridden. But it can be life-threatening. For example, someone who experiences depression, depending on how severe the depression is, it can be life-threatening. But it can cause someone to be bedridden if they have a particularly lethargic experience with depression they have a lot of reduced energy. It can cause them to spend a lot of time in bed. So, you know, you sort of start to see the colors, you know, come out of the fabric here when you are start to, you know, think about, okay, well, how sick does that mean? And, you know, what do different mental illnesses involve? And that's just so sort of starting to paint the picture of how sick is sick. And the truth is that now we know how sick is considered sick, or at least we have a better idea of the machloket involved. So the next question, I think, the next intuitive question is, how much better is considered better? You know, mental illnesses and many illnesses, not just mental illnesses, don't lend themselves always to a clear point of recovery. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. So at what point is someone considered better enough that they could say Birkat HaGomel? And that leads us to our next question, which is, how healed is considered healed? So with this, I actually want to start off in a little bit of a Mimercha K'tavi Lachma way, you know, a little bit of a distant way, in a seemingly unrelated source. The Torah in Parshat Mishpatim in Shmot, Sefer Shmot, has a pasuk. We're going to use this pasuk to answer our question of how healed someone needs to be in order to recite Birkat HaGomel. The Torah says that ki rivun anashim v'ika ish et re'ehu, that when two people quarrel and one of them strikes the other, v'lo yamut v'nafal mishkav, and the struck individual doesn't die as a result of the injury, but has to take to bed because they were seriously injured. Im yakum v'hitalech b'chutz al mishanto, if that injured individual gets up and walks around outdoors upon their staff, V'nika hamata rakshiv to yitain v'rapo yirape. Then the assailant shall go unpunished, except that they have to pay for the injured's idleness, the time that they had to spend not working because they were recovering in bed, and for the actual insurance, how much the actual medical bills actually cost. So just to summarize, the pasuk tells us, the psukim tell us, that when two people are fighting, and one of them hits another and causes them to be seriously injured, if that individual gets up and walks about outdoors on their staff. And again, nowadays, a staff is something that someone uses for support. But in them, I think it was like the cool thing to hold. I think it was like you hold a staff. You were like a person of stature. So here, holding a staff doesn't mean that they were ill. Quite the opposite. It means that they returned to their initial vigor and they were able to walk about with stature and prominence, and prominence the way that they were doing before. And the Torah tells us that in that case, then the assailant is only liable for the injured's idleness and for their cure. And the Gemara, actually, in Masechet Ketubot, teaches in Daf Lamed Gimel, I believe, that the individual is actually imprisoned until we see whether the afflicted party is going to die or going to recover. Sometimes you're not sure whether they're going to pull through or not. And so on the basis of this psukim, we see a very, very interesting tshuva from a certain Maharash Milublin. The Maharash Milublin was Rabbi Shlomo ben Leibush of Lublin. He lived in the 1500s. And he says that this pasuk actually teaches us about our question of how healed someone is considered healed for the purposes of Birkata Gomel. He says here, V'nira she'ein lo levarich ad she'yatza mehatzara legamre. Someone should not recite Birkata Gomel until they completely emerge from whatever it is they were sick with. How do we know this? He says, because when it comes to a sick individual that we just read about, where we do not exempt them from payment, remember we imprison them to see whether the person is going to recover and how well they're going to recover, until they're not exempt from paying until the individual recovers to their full health, right? We said, they really get up and they're walking around like they're back to normal. And Rashi there says, al boro v'chocho, they have to be in their formal healthy state with their former vigor. So the Maharash Milublin says, for the purposes of injuring someone, we know that the barometer, the litmus test for what's considered better is they have to be completely better. So the Maharash Milublin says, in our case too, you know, we should apply the same kind of reasoning. That any time somebody is not walking about in full health after they were suffering from a life-threatening illness, that is still considered, potentially dangerously ill. And Im Kane, if so, the Inyan Birkata Gomel Shemavarich Gomel Chayvim Tovim, Ein Hatova Shlema Kozman Shelo Nigmara. That when it comes to Birkat HaGomel, when someone specifically says, if you look up in source number 3, the language, HaGomel Chayvim Tovot Shegemelani Kol Tov, the Lashon, the specific phraseology has changed a little bit, but you specifically say the word Tovot, you say the word that God has bestowed goodness upon me in helping me heal from this. So the Sedei Haaretz specifically says, "Ein hatova shlema kol zman shelo nigmara." The goodness is not bestowed until it's actually complete, and it's not proper to thank God for goodness until it's actually complete. And we know that the barometer for complete here is complete. It's full health. And so the Maharash Milublin argues on the basis of these psukim and shmot that one recites Birkat HaGomel only after they've recovered enough that they're completely back to normal. There's no trace of the illness left and they're completely, you know, back to normal. Does that shita make sense? Yeah, sort of. Okay. Any questions about the Maharash Milublin? No questions. Okay. So that's the Maharash Milublin. He says, you know, just as somebody who is injured has to be restored to their full health, that's the barometer for what's considered recovery. And on the basis of that, you make the calculation about medical bills and things like that. So to here, when it comes to Birkat HaGomel, recovery is considered a full, complete recovery. Now, in our tradition, we actually have some rabbis who have actually taken this to quite the extreme. I don't remember where I saw this. I believe the Divrei Chaim of Sanz, the Sanzer Rebbe from the Sanz Hasidic dynasty, apparently either his father or himself, when he used to come to shul sometimes, he would recite Birkat HaGomel at Torah reading, and all of his followers, all of his Hasidim, were actually quite confused as to why he was reciting Birkat HaGomel. Because, you know, Hasidim have very devout followers. They're very involved in the lives of the Rebbe. And if the Rebbe was sick, then they would know what was going on. But here, the Divrei Chaim of Sanz was going up to say Birkat HaGomel, and he wasn't clearly sick. And apparently, what happened afterwards was that he would wait so long after he had recovered just to make sure that he had really fully recovered, that by the time he actually got around to saying Birkat HaGomel, the people who were important in his life didn't even know what he was saying it for. He waited that long. So that's really taking the Maharash Milublin to, I guess, it's, you know, its most extreme logical conclusion. But the Maharash Milublin isn't the only option. In fact, in stark opposition to this, we have the opinion of the Shevet Halevi, Rabbi Shmuel Halevi Wozner, who is far more contemporary. And that's why it's actually a little bit unique, because it's not always that you have someone who is contemporary going out on a limb arguing with somebody who, Rabbi Wozner died in 2015. Maharash Milublin lived in the 1500s, and it's not every day that you have somebody who is charting a new path and disagreeing with someone who from 2015 is disagreeing with someone who lived in the 1500s. Rabbi Shmuel Levi Wozner lived in Bnei Brak in Israel, and he said, you know, it's obvious to me that anybody who's no longer in danger, even if they still require treatment, should recite Birkat HaGomel. And here's what he says specifically. He says, to me, it is obvious that whoever emerges from the dangerous illness and leaves their bed to go outside, meaning that they emerge from the essence of the danger, Sheyatza mi etzem hasakana, rak tzaricho deza tipul, meaning they still might require more treatment, but as long as they've recovered enough to the point where they're not in danger from the illness anymore, that's enough to recite Birkat HaGomel. And that's what he says. Yivarech Birkat HaGomel b'shem u'alchut. You should say Birkat HaGomel with Hashem's name. Because even though you're not completely better yet, one is better enough that they're not dangerously ill. That's also considered a worthy miracle that one should thank God for. And so the Shevet Halevi actually disagrees with the Maharash Milublin. So seemingly we're starting to have a little bit more direction here. Let's draw it back towards mental illness. So according to Ashkenazim, again, if the person who was experiencing mental illness was dangerously ill and then recovered, they would recite Birkat HaGomel. And according to Sfardim, if they were at least bedridden, according to Rav Avadja Yosef, how recovered they have to be is a machloket. According to the Maharash Milublin, you have to have a full recovery. And according to Rabbi Shmuel Halevi Wozner, one would have to have a recovery only enough so that they're not dangerously ill anymore, even if they're still struggling. So actually, what I want to do now is I want to actually bring out a chart, and let's start actually, you know, concretizing what we're looking at and talking about. So this chart over here is a list of six common trajectories for depressive disorders. These are not the only six trajectories, but they are six of the most common ones. And, you know, we can start to see, I want to draw, I don't know how to do that. Okay, I'm not going to draw, but you can see my mouse moving, right? Yeah. Okay, great. So you can start to see, let's say take number A, case number A, the horizontal axis is length of time, and the vertical axis is how intense the depressive episode or experience was. So in case number A, we have what's called non-chronic major depressive disorder. In this case, it's recurrent, but it's not always recurrent. So that means that an individual who has this type of depressive disorder, has a pretty intense depressive episode that completely abates, and then it gets better again. So according to the Maharash Milublin, somebody who got to this point in the middle where they're completely better would recite Birkat HaGomel because they have a complete recovery. And according to everyone, they don't have, at what point it becomes life-threatening. Sometimes depression can become life-threatening, but let's say that a little bit lower, it's sort of getting into the life-threatening range someone, would recite Birkat HaGomel. So it seems like in case number A, one would recite Birkat HaGomel if they got to this full point. According to Rabbi Wozner, actually, though, as long as they got to maybe around here, maybe the middle, where they weren't completely better yet, but they were on the way out of it and it wasn't life-threatening anymore, then they would recite Birkat HaGomel at this point. Let's say you took case number F. According to the Maharash Milublin, it seems like somebody who's struggling with F, which is recurrent major depressive episode, where a person has an episode of depression but doesn't recover fully in between. According to the Maharash Milublin, that person seemingly would not recite Birkat HaGomel because there is no full recovery. Whereas according to Rabbi Wozner, one seemingly would recite Birkat HaGomel because there's enough recovery to the point that it's not life-threatening anymore. So we can start to see how these would take shape while we're looking at specific conditions. Does anybody have any questions on that before we move on? No. Okay. So that's sort of, where you start to see how these things are really working. The truth is, and maybe this is what many of you are thinking, which is that many mental illnesses don't have a linear trajectory. And it's kind of nice to see a picture of something in, a clear-cut fashion. But a lot of the times when people are experiencing it, they don't get to see the chart of how it's going to work or what it's going to look like or what kind of shape it's going to take. And it fluctuates. And sometimes they're episodic and sometimes they're not. And sometimes it's really hard to tell when someone's better and when they're not better. And so sort of these kinds of complications is what I want to begin to address last, and then we'll finish up, which leads us to part five, which is episodic disorders and complicating factors. Now, we spoke about how sick is considered sick, and we spoke about how healed is considered healed. But what about when someone, let's go back to the chart, what about when someone has reason to believe or knows that they're going to experience another depressive episode, which, by the way, statistically is never actually true. The statistical chance that somebody after experiencing one depressive episode will experience another one is only 50%, and that someone who experienced the second one will experience a third one is only 50%, and even someone who experienced the sixth one will experience a seventh one is only 50%, and so on. Over the course of the lifetime. So no one actually ever really knows whether they're going to experience another one. But we do have a rule that suffik brachot l'hakel, when there is a doubt about whether to recite a blessing, we are lenient. And so maybe someone who it doesn't know whether they're going to experience their depressive episode, how does that work? What if the mental illness comes and goes? In other words, it's episodic. So I'm just curious, before we look at the sources on that, does anybody have any thoughts about what the halacha in this case would be, or any ideas? Nothing. Okay.
Well,
did someone say something? Okay. All right.
It might have been Kirsten.
Can I talk yet?
Yeah.
Don't we try to arrange life so that we try to say a blessing, so that we see a rainbow and we say a blessing? But we would say a blessing every time we saw a rainbow, even though maybe we're living someplace where we can expect a rainbow to happen very frequently. But so with this being getting better, or getting better enough that we're not in danger of dying immediately, I would think that we would want to say blessings.
Great. So yeah, we do. We do usually want to say blessings, but there's a difference between putting ourselves in situations where we're going to have the opportunity to say a blessing, and a blessing is definitely warranted, versus saying a blessing when one is not sure whether it's actually warranted. Meaning, we like reciting blessings, but really only if we're sure that we're supposed to be reciting a blessing. Because otherwise the fallout, because, you know, one can make the argument that why don't we just always say blessings? The fallout is because a blessing contains the sacred name of God. And we're pretty wary about, you know, saying that name loosely. And we want to make sure that we really are supposed to be doing it before we say God's name. And so therefore it's true, we would want to look at a rainbow and say a blessing on a rainbow, because we're very clear that a rainbow does require a blessing. But when we're not sure whether a blessing is actually required, we're a little bit more reticent, if that makes sense. So let's jump into, because it's getting a little bit late, let's jump into the episodic disorders and some of the other complicating factors. So the truth is that the episodic disorders was spoken about very early on, not when it comes to mental illness, but when it comes to medical illness, and we're going to extrapolate. The Rashba, Rabbi Shlomo ben Aderet, who lived in Spain in Barcelona, he was born in 1235 and he died in 1310. And he was asked, what about episodic illnesses? Let's say you have somebody who's sick and they know that they're sick, but they get better, but they know that it's going to come back. They have reason to believe that it's only a matter of time before it comes back. And what does the Rashba say? He says, "Ein hefresh bein sheyesh lo mechush kavua." There's no difference between somebody who has an illness that is here to stay, leba mizman lizman, to an illness that comes and goes, uvein she'eino kavua, and is not really as concrete and cemented in as something that comes and goes. And the Rashba says, va'adraba, kol shehu kavua hu yoter chazak. The Rashba says, actually, something that's episodic, that actually sticks around, and, you know, even if you get rid of it, it still comes back, that's actually a much more significant illness, according to the Rashba. And therefore, the Rashba says, kal v'chomer, how much more so in that case, somebody should actually recite Birkat HaGomel. And he says it's a considered a miracle every time somebody recovers. It's still considered a miracle each and every time. And so therefore, somebody who is struggling with an episodic disorder would actually say Birkat HaGomel upon the recovery from that. And the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, rules in source number 18, B'chol choli tzarich levarich, that any ill individual must say Birkat HaGomel. And he quotes the Rashba, Ein hefresh bein sheyesh lo mechush kavua levein uval Lizman, Lizman, Uvein She'enu Kavua. There's no difference between somebody who suffers from a chronic illness that flares up from time to time, or somebody who recovers from an illness that is not chronic. So the Rashba seemingly answers our question right out of the box. Somebody who is struggling with an episodic disorder, you know, something potentially like number A or number F, would recite Birkat HaGomel upon recovery. Now, the Rashba doesn't weigh in on the machloket that we saw above about how recovered is considered recovered. Remember, we had the Maharash Milublin that required a full recovery, and we had the Shevet Halevi, Rabbi Wozner, who required recovery only to the point that it's not life-threatening, and then you're good to go for Birkat HaGomel purposes. But he does say that, without weighing in on that, that however you define healed, even if you know it's going to come back, as long as you've healed to that barometer, you're okay. And that's enough to say Birkat HaGomel. And that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. The Machazik Bracha, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulai, who was more famously known as the Chida, was a Sephardic rabbi who lived in He lived in then Palestine, and he spent a lot of time actually traveling to Europe to raise money. So he was very familiar with the world of Ashkenazic Jewry, as far as I'm aware. And he actually seems to disagree with this Rashba. Just because we're running short on time, I'm not going to read it inside. But he essentially says, we could read the English, one with a fever that comes and goes, essentially, the illness recurs, should not recite Birkat HaGomel between each bout of fever. So the Machzik Bracha actually seems to disagree with the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch. Now, the weird thing is that it would be very, it's very uncommon for the Chida to disagree with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is Sfardi, the Chida is Sfardi. So why is the Chida disagreeing with the Shulchan Aruch? So the Sedei Ha'aretz is not on the source sheet. Rabbi Avraham Miuchas that we saw before actually writes that they're not disagreeing. That the Machazik Bracha, the Rashba is talking about a case where the person completely recovered in between bouts of the illness. And the Machazik Bracha is talking about a case where someone did not completely, there was no complete inter-illness recovery before the next episode hit. And therefore, they're not really disagreeing. I personally had a very hard time with that understanding because the Machazik Bracha himself says, Umit rapeh va'omed al raglav kibari, that somebody heals and gets up completely healthy. But then it goes back to their original illness, doesn't recite Birkat HaGomel. So it seems to me that the Machazik Bracha, the Chida, is really disagreeing with the Rashba, but the Shulchan Aruch does paskin like the Rashba. And so for an episodic illness, one would recite Birkat HaGomel. Now, the last thing, there are lots of, you know, features that make mental illnesses unique. But the last one I want to discuss is, what about if somebody uses medication or other sort of treatment to help them recover? Is that considered healing? As soon as someone stops taking the medication, the condition is liable to return. Is that really considered healing? So Rabbi Moshe Halevi Sparrow, he's still around. He lives in Israel. He's a psychologist, and he's basically the grandfather of Judaism and psychology. He was writing about this stuff when nobody was writing about it. He has some really fascinating books, although I think most of them are out of print at this point. And he says that b'mikrim miuchadim shalafrot nefashiyot. He writes in an article about Birkat HaGomel after struggling with mental illness, that in specific instances, asher ein adayin bidei harefuah l'refuatan, that the specific treatments that are available at the time, and I want to say at the time because there are new treatments for mental illness that come up all the time, and some of them are very effective and some of them are very cool. For example, last year, I think the FDA approved a nasal spray to treat depression. Some of the cutting edge stuff that's out there. But at the time that a person is struggling, there's no the doctors don't really have hope that the treatments available will completely cure an individual. However, b'midah nikeret, in a significant way, medication can be mishtalet aleinu levakran derech tipul trufati, that medication can significantly mitigate the manifestations of the illness and can significantly control the specific mental illness, such as lithium carbonate for manic depression, which is now called bipolar disorder, or tricyclics for more major depression. And he says even electroconvulsive therapy, which is a form of treatment for depression that involves sending shockwaves through the brain, and sort of like resetting it. That's the idea. Although people are really not so sure how it works. Yesh levarich birkat HaGomel in trilat hashipur. That if somebody is better, not completely better, but better enough that they, even if you stop taking medication, one's condition would return. But because of the medication, one is able to return to normal, healthy functioning. Then that individual, according to Rabbi Moshe Sparrow, would say Birkat HaGomel. So there's a lot to talk about here, and we can schmooze for a while. I wanted to discuss attempted suicide, but maybe we could start off by doing that next time, or if people want to talk about it, or if someone wants to ask a question about it at the end, we can talk about it then. But I just want to be mindful of people's time. So I just want to, if you weren't paying attention, just brief summary, you can get the whole sheer here. So Birkano Gomel is a thing, and mental illness is a genuine medical condition, and so it will be subject to Birkat HaGomel according to the same rules as a physical illness. Now, Ashkenazim, in accordance with the Ramaz ruling that we saw, would only recite Birkat HaGomel on a mental illness if it endangered their life. According to Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, Sfardim would do so if it causes them to be bedridden or more. Although, remember, we saw the Sedei HaAretz that said you only need to be bedridden. We read that according to Rav Avadji Yosef, that wasn't the case. And so Sfardim would say Birkat HaGomel if it causes them to be bedridden or is dangerous, even if it doesn't cause them to be bedridden. There's a machloket whether someone recites Birkat HaGomel even if they aren't fully healed. That's a machloket between the Maharash Milublin and the Shevet Halevi. And that would have implications about how much better someone has to be, especially for mental illness, where it's kind of ambiguous sometimes how better, when one is better and when one is feeling better. So according to the Shevet Halevi, as long as one gets better to the point, you know, if someone was, God forbid, suicidal, then as long as it got to the point where they weren't having those kinds of thoughts so much anymore, that would be enough according to the Shevet Halevi, who requires just removal from the life-threatening situation. According to the Maharash Milublin, that would seemingly not be enough to recite Birkat HaGomel. And then somebody who struggles with an episodic disorder would recite Birkat HaGomel if they remit completely or probably even nearly completely in between episodes. Again, how much would depend upon the machloket between the Shevet Halevi and the Maharash Milublin. And then we have over here this chart. So we already discussed A and F. Let's say somebody now this isn't a lifetime over here. So just because it's really, really bad. The average depressive episode is like untreated. So that's even untreated is like 5 to 9 months. So this isn't just like a chronic person's life. And if someone's struggling with depression, there's no reason to think that that's what their life on a graph would look like. Or even if it does look like that now, it would continue to look like that. We can sort of start to answer the questions. Now, depressive disorders are not the only mental health conditions that can be life-threatening, but it's the only one that I have this cool chart for. So that's what I'm using. We can look at B. Let's take B, for example, where, you know, it doesn't reach the level of something that's serious enough to be considered life-threatening. Again, according to Sfardim, that would be enough to recite Birkat HaGomel, because according to Sfardim, you just have to be bedridden, assuming that somebody is, you know, lethargic enough to be in bed. Although maybe that shouldn't be assumed. According to number E, let's say somebody was really struggling enough that they were, it did reach a life-threatening state, but it got better, but not completely better. That would depend upon the machloket between the Maharash Milublin and the Shevet Halevi about how much better is considered better. And if they got to this point in the graph as a result of medication, according to Rabbi Moshe Halevi Sparrow, presumably that would be enough to recite Birkat HaGomel as well. That's that. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. I know that this is, you know, this can be an intense topic. And I just wanted to, I guess, just take a minute and we'll just breathe. Okay. I'm happy. I know it's 9:06. I was trying to keep this under an hour, but if anybody, obviously feel free to excuse yourself. If anybody has any thoughts or questions or comments, I would love to hear them. So,
Ezra, I just want to, before I'll bump in before anyone else says anything, I think it's both, that was really a fascinating halachic presentation around an issue of health and mental health. And I think on a meta level, one of the most important things is that within our own Jewish tradition and our own halachic tradition, that this is a real benefit to our community in that it destigmatizes mental health from within the Orthodox tradition. So I want to offer you Yasher Koach for kind of advancing that discussion and that really important facet of our communal life. So Yasher Koach for that, and thank you.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Leave it to everyone else now.
One question I have is sort of where, well, first of all, I completely agree with Rabbi Albert, so thank you. Second is where it falls that, I mean, in, let's take depression since that's what we were talking about. One can be highly functioning with depression while still dealing with suicidal ideation and things like that. So even though you would look like you're at sort of that moderate level, what's going on inside you is really down here. And so I guess my question is where that would fall in terms of Birkat HaGomel and all of the rest of it.
Great question. So in terms of Birkat HaGomel, whether somebody is manifesting outward signs of functioning or not, as long as if somebody's, you know, considering suicide, then that would be enough, because at the end of the day, what we're looking to find out is whether their life is in danger, not whether their other people can tell that their life is in danger. And so as long as the first criteria, their life is actually in danger, is met, whether or not other people are able to realize that is not relevant for the recitation of Birkat HaGomel.
Great. Well, I want to thank you again for staying up very late on the East Coast and teaching Torah to and with our community. And I'm looking forward to the second part of this series next Tuesday night. Huge yashar koach again for teaching this excellent and really clear shiur on a complicated area of halacha, but also I think just as important, maybe more important, in helping us address and talk in the open about mental health issues in the Orthodox community from a halachic lens. So yashar koach again.
All right. Thanks so much for coming, everyone.